SBC Media.
Welcome to iGaming Daily, analysing the news from the betting and gaming industry all over the globe. Supported by SBC Summit Barcelona, the industry-leading conference bringing you the future of sports betting and iGaming.
SBC Summit Barcelona is where you can experience the global industry coverage under one roof. Expect an industry-leading conference agenda covering all verticals across seven stages, a huge trade show floor filled with over 3,000 exhibitors, and luxury networking events at premium venues in one of Europe's coolest cities. Join 10,000 executives this September at the event drawing the industry's eyes. Get your tickets now at sbcevents.com.
Promotional credits. Some will tell you it's an absolute necessity to do business. Others will tell you it's a way to scam states out of tax revenue. And still others will say that advertising promotional offers might be what brings the U.S. sports betting industry down. So what's the truth about promo credit? We're going to talk about that on today's episode of iGaming Daily.
SBC Summit Barcelona is where you can experience the entire global industry coverage under one roof. Join 10,000 industry professionals for 3 days of game-changing conversation and education. Get your tickets now at sbcevents.com.
I'm Jessica Wellman, editor of SBC Americas, joined by Charlie Horner, SBC Americas senior writer, and Sue Schneider, SBC's VP of Growth and Strategy. I don't know if you'll feel the same way once we dive into this topic, because it tends to be contentious and sometimes frustrating. Sue, you are what I like to call the OG of OG. You've been in this business for so long. How has promo credit developed over the years and turned into kind of the monster that it is today?
The idea of offering incentives to players has gone on since day one. I mean, again, I've been in the business since 95, and as it's gotten more competitive over the years, you certainly have seen a lot more people get into offering that. To be honest, I'm not sure the promo credit idea, which to me, the credit also is synonymous with the tax side of it, and that's relatively recent. And what's happened is you've seen a situation where it with many of the states in the U.S. where there's been legalization, the industry, as they've tried to educate legislators, has said, you know, give us some credit for our marketing costs that are out there. So, you know, it has gotten contentious, and it's gotten to be one of our vulnerabilities, I think. When I look at the industry vulnerabilities today, they're around advertising, they're around promo credits, and they're around relationships with colleges as it stands right now. But the promo credits, I think, from the standpoint of how we're dealing with the state governments, has gotten pretty serious. You know, the ones that are skeptical would say that, you know, it's basically tax subsidized marketing cost, and it's hurt the state's bottom line of revenues that they thought they were going to get. So that's probably the heart of the problem right now. But bonuses and offering bonuses. And the flip side of that for the industry was bonus hunters who, you know, we have very promiscuous players. So it's a situation where they would just go from one site to the other to get the best deal and be able to play on their money for a while. So that's been around. That part's been around for a long time.
I think what's interesting about it, though, you know, Charlie, you can comment on this. What does the promotional offer do? The promotional offers in the U.S. look like compared to the U.K.?
They are huge. I mean, when I first started reporting on the U.S. industry, I couldn't believe the size of some of the bonus offers and promo credits that were being offered to U.S. players. I mean, here, if you see a sign-up offer of around £25, you probably think that's quite a good deal. So to see some offers in the thousands of dollars is just mind-blowing from a UK perspective. And as Sue quite rightly says, is that sometimes can be, you know, tax deductible. And there's not many more industries that you can get your marketing costs tax deductible. It's an interesting culture change.
Yeah. And I think now would be a good time to explain to some people, to our listeners, exactly why promo credits and tax rates kind of go hand in hand. And I remember very specifically getting the first revenue report out of Pennsylvania, which was the first state that allowed these promo credit deductions to happen, where there's kind of two numbers you look at when you're looking at revenue. You're looking at gross gaming revenue and you're looking at adjusted gaming revenue. Gross gaming revenue is pure handle minus payouts. Adjusted gaming revenue, you're talking your federal excise tax and you're talking promotional credit deductions. And I remember our jaw being on the floor that there were, you know, 10 million in promo credit deductions by an operator in a month. And now that number is kind of paltry if we're talking about a new launch. So every time we're talking about tax rates in the US, you want to think about the pure rate and you want to think about the rate if there's promo credits that is the effective tax rate. I think Colorado, Sue, does that seem like the state that really was the tipping point here on states that were allowing promotional credit deductions and the outcry over just how little was going into tax coffers started to get a little louder?
Well, that certainly was one of the first. And I think, you know, again, you have to kind of go back to the original issue, which is that, you know, there are many studies often that are presented to state legislatures. And, you know, I don't want to belittle the companies that do those kind of studies, but I listen to these numbers and I always feel like, well, where did they get that from? And did they pull that out of the air or, you know, really what goes into that? And so, you know, that sets the bar. And then when that doesn't come anywhere close to happening, and particularly because of that, it's not necessarily because of the market revenues that are coming in to the operators, but when those credits take place, then, you know, it's that much less that the state's getting. So you've seen now a number, and you probably know better than I, which states allow that. I think it's pretty predominant at this point that many of them do. You're already now starting to see a backlash where there are some states, I think Virginia may have done that, and maybe one or two others, where they put a ceiling on it, which is probably the most reasonable way to handle it that balances out the interest of both the industry as well as the state to be able to, because otherwise the state legislators feel like they got sold a bill of goods, which is not going to portend well for other things, other ask that the industry might have down the road. So, you know, it gets complicated really quickly. And I expect to see more legislation from some of these states as, you know, what they're looking at the revenue numbers to the industry and thinking, well, okay, well, they're getting that. Why aren't we getting what we were told we were supposed to get? If they reach those levels. So that, I think, is probably the biggest complication and one that the industry needs to try to get together to figure out. And it's tough because, you know, to be real honest with you, I chaired a trade association for internet gaming from 96 to 2004, I guess. And, you know, it's hard to get this industry to come together. It really is. And then you complicate it by the fact that each state has its own set of constituents within the industry because it's, you know, land-based or those that may have skins or partners or whatever. So you have a different cast of characters in each state. So that makes it even harder to try to come together with a single voice to try to address what some of these vulnerabilities are.
Yeah, and you are right. States like Colorado are retroactively going back and going through either creating new regs or going back through the legislature and amending their rules to do either no promo credit or what you said, which I think is probably where we're landing in some of these states now going forward, a tiered approach where year one, maybe you can deduct everything. Year two, you can deduct up to 20% of your total monthly GGR, 10%, and then by year five, you've phased out. But what we're seeing, Charlie, talk a bit about Ohio. That's a state where we're already seeing that the ramp up of how much this promo credit spend is in the first month and then the fall off in a state like Ohio where you can't deduct promo credit is really steep, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, we were really excited as an industry about the launch of Ohio. And, you know, there's a massive population of sports fans. So from the sportsbook's perspective, they want to try and get as many of those customers as they can early on. So we saw in January, sportsbooks spent $320 million on promo credits. And so that inflates handle up to $1.1 billion. Which was a big headline figure and something that everyone was really excited about. Of course, you've got to deduct that $320 million from the $1.1 billion. But the interesting thing was the release of February's report, which showed that the promo credit spend had reduced to $59 million. I think that's a reduction of something like 80% or something like that.
It's a little over 80%, yeah.
So you're already kind of seeing that sportsbooks are happy to invest early on, but then really ramp that back as they acquire customers early on.
Yeah, there is a big land rush at the beginning every time one opens, and so that's interesting to see that it's that big a drop off. That's tells you something.
Well, I think too it tells you. The question is, if Ohio did allow promo deductions, they don't. If they did, would that drop off be so steep? I would think the answer is no. If you look at Colorado, a state that has allowed promo credit deductions fully, their spend consistently stays about $10 million a month across the operators. It'll peak a little during football season and go down a little during the off season. But there's no real incentive to curb your promo spend when you can fully write it off. This is where I do my rant every time I have this conversation too. A promotional dollar does not cost a dollar. You know, we haven't heard from operators if it costs them on average 72 cents or 64 cents. I don't know what that number is, but it's not a dollar for dollar trade-off here because some of these promo bets lose. And you get to just kind of recoup that free bet as if it never happened. It does inflate handle, but that's kind of my complaint with promo credit deductions has always been, well, they didn't spend a dollar. It's like writing off a coupon if you're at the grocery store and the grocery store gets to write off that 30 cents you took off your laundry detergent or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, and doesn't Ohio have all these retail kiosk and stuff too. Now, again, I don't know what proportion of their revenue comes from that, but that's a little, to me, that's like comparing apples and oranges in some ways, because, you know, those are land-based kiosk. I don't know what kind those operators where it's a, might be in a grocery store like Kroger or it's in a truck stop or whatever. I don't know that they're doing any of that. So that my guess is a lot of that credit falls to the strictly online operators.
This is strictly online operator credit. Is this the kiosk? It's a strange situation in Ohio. I think that some of the suppliers have had supply chain issues, so you haven't seen it as much in the grocery stores yet. The ones that are out there are typically in bars, sports bars and restaurants. They're lottery run. They're different suppliers. It's not like a FanDuel kiosk that you walk in and bet on. It's Intralot and Aristocrat and those kinds of people.
Yeah, but they're the first one really that have done that model in any substantial way. I know when they first came out and said they were going to have 7,000 licenses, and I was like, what?
Yeah, it's a head turner, right? Well, and it's picking up already. We could do a whole other pod, Sue, especially on what happened in Missouri with the sports betting bill. But one of the amendments was to allow kiosks in sports bars so that small business owners can get in on this. I don't know if the continued performance of Ohio is going to tell us that this is not really the profit machine that you think it is. Although I think the argument for that and VLTs is that to these small business owners, if you're making an additional $20,000 a year, that's actually huge.
Well, and a lot of that goes back to the power of the state lottery too, since in many cases they probably will be running those.
So yeah, I think that The other piece of this, certainly the tax piece of this, is something that has drawn a lot of criticism. It was in the lobbying piece of New York Times criticism of the state. And I think in hindsight, optically, it does feel a little like, in Colorado in particular, lawmakers probably felt the wool pulled over their eyes. It optically doesn't help the industry that typically these tax revenues go to things like, in Colorado, water conservation, in lots of states, educational efforts. So presenting that states lost out on X million of dollars to help children because sports books were giving out bonus dollars and writing them off tax-wise, not the best look you'll ever see. But the other thing that's a bad look is promo credits and risk-free bets in advertising. We've seen Ohio, Massachusetts, Ontario are all doing different levels of prohibitions on this. How do we think these efforts are going? Charlie, how have things gone in terms of limiting how we're promoting these credit offers in advertising?
Well, I think we're starting to see the industry open their arms to this kind of prohibition. I know we've seen a lot of operators recently say that they are just voluntarily going to say that they're going to remove risk-free from their advertising. The reception to the banning of advertising of inducements in Ontario seems to be, pretty good from operators or conversations that I've had with people. So I think it's something that operators they know what's coming. They know they can see the bad press. They can see that people aren't necessarily reacting too well. So I think they're just adjusting accordingly.
I will push back on this a little bit, though. I get that we're not saying risk-free anymore. What we're doing instead is somebody pulled out a thesaurus and has now said, well, instead of calling it a risk-free bet, we're going to call it a bonus wager. Congratulations, industry. We fixed it. And I don't really, that feels materially stupid to me. I can't think of a better word for it. Sue, you're nodding. Do you have thoughts on how the industry has been handling their advertising, especially around promo offers?
This is one of those things that, you know, if you look at this is where we should learn from around the world. You know, Americans tend to be pretty insular and don't necessarily learn lessons from elsewhere. But this has been a longstanding pet peeve of mine is the advertising side of things. You know, in the UK, in Australia, they actually have I don't know that they're necessarily state run, but they're quasi-public bodies. Like in the UK, I believe it's called Advertising Standards, whatever agency. I don't know what the A is for. In Australia, they have a similar thing where essentially they have to vet every ad. It's kind of like it's akin to what we had during the tobacco situation with, you know, Joe Camel. You can't have Joe Camel. It's incentive to kids, you know. And we should have learned from that. And I know during the playoffs, like the football playoffs or, you know, that sort of thing. I mean, when the advertising was just off the charts, ubiquitous, it was like constant. And every time I would see risk-free, I would just cringe thinking that's going to come back and bite us all in the butt. And that's pretty much what happened. Now, I will give credit to American Gaming Association. They recently have tried to adapt their sort of advertising self-regulation that they've proposed, and they've got members that have adopted that and all that. And they specifically talked about risk-free language. But I also would agree with you, Jessica, that what I'm seeing now is just some adaptations that are almost as cringeworthy. They don't use that terminology, but they sound just as bad. I think there's two things. One, that triggers a government backlash. You're seeing bans in Belgium and, you know, various countries. You know, you can't do sponsorships anymore with some of these. You can't even advertise now, I believe, in Belgium at all. And I think in the Netherlands has some of that. So we need to learn from what's going on in some of these other countries. And see if we can avoid that, because we're either going to get a government backlash, or what it does is just fuel the anti-gaming folks. Those are the two outcomes that will happen And, you know, we just have to find a way of getting together and figure out how to approach that in among a very, there's a term I've always liked called co-opetition. And this is one of those areas where we need co-opetition. Because otherwise we're going to get a heavy hand. That's the reality of it.
Yeah. You raised a really good point, which is right now, depending on what state you're in, there are different ways that the regulators interface with operators on advertising. In some states, everything that you do kind of needs to be submitted to the regulator. I believe in New Jersey, this is how they function. Hey, we want to run a commercial. Here it is, DGE. Will you sign off on it? Okay, here's our commercial. What we saw in Massachusetts, where the regulatory body didn't necessarily, I don't think a lot of them do have the bandwidth to vet just how much advertising these operators are putting out there. But it was more, okay, we'll let you, here are the rules. We'll let you put out what you want so long as you follow these rules. And now there's a long list of incidents, and we're seeing the same thing in Ohio, a long list of incidents where either they've just outright broken the rule, or something like the can't miss parlay or can't lose parlay. I say it wrong every time and got chastised by Barstool about it, but the can't lose parlay, where I think you're doing your best to push as far against that regulation as possible to see if you can be tongue in cheek and be irreverent. And I'm as snarky and sarcastic as anybody I know, but there's a place for it, and the place is not in like a highly regulated industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we really do have a situation where, again, in those other countries that I mentioned, they have a federal agency that oversees that. Here, because of the nature of how we've done things, I mean, AGA, you know, it's almost 30 years ago, really, when they were coming up on that. And they really have fought trying to keep gambling regulation on a state level as opposed to a federal level for a variety of reasons. So that leaves it, that leaves the patchwork, which I know is frustrating for a lot of people, because that's why we've seen the advent of a lot of compliance companies, just to try to keep track of all that stuff. But we're going to get it. It's coming if we don't find a way to self-regulate in this regard. And I don't know, the risk is if it comes in on a federal level, then that's going to open the door, I think, for other things, gambling, to go that route too, which most of the industry has fought for decades now.
Charlie, we have a federal proposition technically right now, right?
Yeah, is it the Betting on Our Future Act?
Yes.
That seeks to just ban sportsbook ads outright federally across TV, radio, and online. Which, of course, you know, as unlikely as it seems to pass, you know, you've got to take these things seriously, and you've got to acknowledge that, okay, maybe it is time to really get our act together in terms of self-regulate our adverts, because otherwise the federal government are going to do it for us. But it's difficult, I think, in an age of social media, instant gratification, things like that. If one sports book reduces their advertising, you can be left behind instantly. So if you're the one business to reduce all synonyms of risk-free from their advertising, and everyone else is pushing the boundary right to the regulatory limit, then, you know, you can be punished for doing the right thing.
You absolutely are right. It's a big game of chicken right now to see who is willing to push as far. And I feel like, you know, Sue, it reminds me a bit of that big poker heyday we had, where whoever was willing to push the legal limits of advertising, those who chose to stay after UEGA, I mean, it was a big gamble, but look at poker stars now. The one who was kind of the most willing to take the most risk benefited the most at the end of the day.
And that's a good way to put it. It is a game of chicken, but, you know, that's not necessarily good business. I mean, it's a gamble. We'll put it that way.
What a great pun to end this on.
It's definitely a gamble.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of iGaming Daily, brought to you in conjunction with SBC Summit Barcelona, being held at the Fira Barcelona Montjuïc on the 19th to the 21st of September. If you want to find out more about some of the subjects raised today, feel free to explore any of the sites in the SBC News Network or check out the latest edition of the SBC Leaders magazine. Happy reading.